This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. Police and fire investigators have completed their initial probe into the three-alarm fire that destroyed a large commercial building at the former Blue Heron paper mill in Oregon City on Saturday. Unfortunately, the investigation was thwarted by the significant damage to the property. The manner in which the building collapsed under extreme fire conditions has hampered the ability of investigators to conduct an in-depth scene examination at this time, Clackamas Fire said in a press release Monday afternoon. Clackamas Fire said its investigators are coordinating with the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, which owns the mill property, to continue investigating the scene and also facilitate the removal of fire debris. The fire district is also working with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office and Oregon City Police Department to investigate the incident. Investigators remain unsure as to the exact cause of the fire, though one man who was located on scene at the time the fire broke out was arrested and has been charged with second-degree arson, among other crimes. Enrique Omar Mejia, 29, was reportedly observed by both civilian witnesses and Oregon City police throwing furniture and other items from the second floor of the building just before the fire broke out on the afternoon of December 5th. Mejia was located within the perimeter established by law enforcement and arrested at the scene without incident. Mejia has a lengthy criminal record of mostly misdemeanor offenses, including disorderly conduct, interfering with a police officer, harassment, and criminal trespass. He remains in custody at the Clackamas County Jail as of Tuesday morning. His bail has been increased to $100,000. Dozens of frustrated parents, students, and even teachers from Clackamas County and across the state gathered outside Revolution Hall in Portland on Sunday to call for the reopening of K-12 schools and a return to safe in-person learning. The rally was spearheaded by ED300, a grassroots parent-led coalition calling for optional in-person learning to resume by January 6, 2021, exactly 300 days since most of Oregon's approximately 600,000 students set foot inside a classroom. One of the speakers at the rally was Melanie Gabriel, an eighth grader who said she dropped out of school last year because distance learning was just too much for her. On Sunday, she read a copy of oral testimony that she presented during a state Senate committee hearing this last week, likening the experience of distance learning to being shut inside a glass box alone. "You have placed the burden of this pandemic on the children to carry, and we are done," she said. "We will not carry your burden anymore. We are going to make a stand, and we won't stop until we are back in school where we belong. I am asking you to shatter our glass boxes and set us free." The group stressed that it is seeking a safe, science-based approach to reopening schools and simply wants parents, teachers, and students to have the choice of returning if they want to. Those who want to stay home should be able to. Similar rallies were also held in New York and Georgia. At the end of October, Governor Kate Brown and the Oregon Health Authority loosened the coronavirus metrics for reopening schools on a county-by-county basis. However, even those less restrictive guidelines remain well out of reach for Clackamas County, at least for the time being. In a letter to families last week, Canby Superintendent Tripp Goodall said he is hopeful the district may transition to some in-person instruction in classrooms early next year. We are hopeful that after winter break, we will see a drop in cases and we can begin the transition to in-person learning, Goodall said. That will only happen if we all work together to stop the spread of the virus. He encouraged parents and students to continue to diligently follow the now standard public health advice, wear a mask, wash your hands often, and maintain a safe physical distance from people outside your household. Crikey! A Canby native was this week named the 2020 International Higher Education Student of the Year in the Australian state of New South Wales. Jamie Emerson, currently an information technology student at Australian Catholic University in North Sydney, has a passion for personal and corporate social responsibility and is known for her relentless commitment and leadership skills. Being from the United States, Jamie understood the need for international students to have opportunities to develop their skills for employment outside the university, the awarding body, StudyNSW, said in a press release. As part of her charity, Jamie offers volunteer opportunities to international students to help kickstart their careers. Emerson is the founder in residence for the UTS Techcelerator Female Founder Mentoring Program, which develops insights into how social responsibility can benefit organizations, businesses, and communities. And after enduring her own struggles with chronic fatigue syndrome, she founded her own charity, Chronic Hope, to help those living with chronic illnesses achieve better health outcomes and find hope in their situations. Oh, we are so proud of our daughter and her accomplishments, said her mother, Christy Emerson, a resident of Canby for more than 40 years. She has been in school, working, and created a nonprofit. We are happy for her and the recognition of her hard work. The NSW International Student Awards recognize the contributions international students make to their communities in New South Wales and celebrate excellence and community engagement by international students. The Australian state boasts more than a 250,000 international students, many of whom become great ambassadors for New South Wales as future leaders and advocates for trade, diplomacy, and research links. The 2020 New South Wales International Student Awards were meant to shine a light on international student leaders, education providers, business and community groups, and celebrate their contributions to the community over the past 12 months, and particularly through the COVID-19 pandemic. Hundreds of local children will be taking home a free book this Christmas thanks to the generosity of Friends of the Canby Public Library. The local nonprofit is giving away two books for 3rd through 5th grade readers, Crenshaw, a fantasy novel about a 10-year-old and his imaginary friend, a talking cat, by Newbery Medal winner Catherine Applegate, and for younger learners, Tacky the Penguin, a read-aloud story from beloved children's book author Helen Lester. The Friends of the Public Library purchased 100 copies of each from the local bookseller, The Book Nook. It has been such a hard year for families and kids, and we thought that this was one small way we could reach out and show we care, said Friends board member Mary Voskel, who proposed the project and helped ensure it came to fruition. We wanted them to know their community cares about them and is thinking about them during this holiday season. The book giveaway is also an expression of gratitude, Friends leader said. We have received so much support from our community over the years, agreed co-chair Lois Brooks. Your support has enabled us to fund countless educational programs and concerts, as well as special projects like the Library Information Desk and the Teen Room. We wanted the entire Canby community to know how much we appreciate you. Oh, we have missed seeing you this year, said co-chair Katrina Nelson. We have missed seeing the smiles, the dancing, the way a child's eyes lights up when they see the Birdman. But we're not going anywhere. We hope you have a healthy and happy holiday season and hope to see you in person in 2021. For your free copy, visit any one of the following locations while supplies last. The Book Nook, Canby Kiwanis Thrift Store, Dahlia Home and Garden, Retro Revival, and the Swan Island Dahlia Gift Shop. Books will be available starting Friday, December 11th. The Friends have also pivoted on one of the most well-known annual fundraisers, the Canby Christmas Tour of Homes, which involves community members opening up their homes to visitors and showcasing their holiday decorations. Instead, the Friends will be presenting their first ever Christmas Tour of Lights, a festive review of the community's best outdoor holiday finery, hosted by our own, the man, the myth, the legend, Tyler Franke of the Canby Current, and now here are the studios. Can't wait for that. Boy, look for that on the Friends of the Canby Public Library's Facebook page on Saturday, December 12th, which is when the Christmas Tour of Homes would have occurred. And finally, Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif and Hunsaker, PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. The start of high school sports was pushed back again this week as the state's COVID-19 outlook continues to worsen. The Oregon Schools Activities Association announced this week that it has revised its schedule to begin high school sports competition in March. Fall sports, that's football, cross country, soccer, and volleyball, are set to begin practices February 22nd, except football, which will start practices February 8th, and begin competition March 1st. Spring sports, baseball, softball, golf, tennis, and track and field, are scheduled to start practices April 5th and competition on April 12th. And winter sports, basketball, swimming, and wrestling, are set to start practices May 10th and competition May 17th. Seasons will be shortened to 6 weeks. Today's decision by the executive board is another reminder of the impact the pandemic has had on Oregon students and schools, said OSAA Executive Director Peter Weber. While disappointed that we need to adjust our original schedule, we believe that keeping three distinct seasons, albeit in shortened seasons, maintains potential opportunities for all students moving forward. Shortly after the announcement Monday, Canby head coach Jimmy Joyce took to Twitter to praise the OSAA for its work and advocacy on behalf of student athletes. Thank you, OSAA, for your continued advocacy and flexibility when seeking the most equitable schedule for all student athletes, Joyce wrote. There's still work to do, so let's play our part and hashtag mask up to get back on the field. Full contact sports such as football, basketball, wrestling, cheer, and dance remain prohibited right now, per recent guidance by the governor's office and the Oregon Health Authority. Activities like choir and band have been pushed back to the end of the school year to provide their programs the opportunity to rehearse in person if the school district policy allows. Cheerleading and dance culminating weeks have also been adjusted to allow more time for facilities to open or have weather improve enough to move outdoors.
Stay connected to what matters most this holiday season with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While the holidays may look different for many of us this year, you can always count on DirectLink's reliable network to keep your video calls, Snapchat, stories, and photos crystal clear. DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members this holiday season and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. For more information, visit directlink.coop. And from all of us here at Now Hear This Canby and our friends at DirectLink, stay safe, stay healthy, stay connected, and have a very happy holiday season.
All right, joining us in the Canby conversation today, we're so excited to welcome for the first time new Canby City Administrator Scott Archer. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Tyler. Thanks.
We're so excited.
Glad to be here. Yeah, we're so excited to have you. Thank you for joining us today in the midst of just coming down from your first month on the job. Yep. So still getting up to speed and everything. I'm sure that will continue for quite some time. But I wanted to start by asking you, for our listeners that may not be as familiar, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your experience with Canby? You were kind of interested in this community and in living here even before you knew you had this job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me, Tyler. Appreciate the opportunity. I guess a little bit about myself and my background. I basically grew up in Clackamas County, and I've lived in or very near, not too far from Canby, or within driving distance for probably the better part of my life. Both as a young person and then as an adult raising my family and now my wife and I. So my background is I've got about 30 years of experience in local government. Mm-hmm. I've worked for both cities and Clackamas County, and I even worked a little bit early in my career for a school district. So I've kind of got a gamut of local government service type of work. And then, as my career kind of continued forward, I obviously became more involved in the leadership aspect of things and working at higher levels within organizations. And so what I really have found out is my real passion and sweet spot in local government is with cities, and in particular with cities around the size of Canby. It's like a perfect size of fit in my view. And then my local connection. So most recently, I worked for Clackamas County as the director of the North Clackamas Park and Recreation District for mm-hmm. close to the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. That is a large county entity that serves about 120,000 people and roughly has about the same size of budget and similar staffing sizes to the city organization here.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, I was with the city of Oregon City for about 12 years, and then I could keep going backwards, but
right. I went to preschool at Little Hearts Jumping.
Yeah, but my point there is just that I've been close by, been based out of Oregon City for close to the last 20 years. We raised our kids in our current home, and they've all kind of moved into that early adulthood portion of their life. And so my wife and I are now empty nesters. And, to your earlier point, you were asking me, it was really, I guess, call it fortuitous or whatever you want. But before this job became known to me and the opportunity, my wife and I are looking to downsize from our current home. And one of the areas that we had honed in on was Canby. And we had become quite interested in this community because of its size, its livability, its proximity to, our family members that are all kind of in the Portland area mostly and in this region. So it just became really attractive. And the more that we became acquainted, I mean, we live, I just live a 10 or 12 minute drive down the road. So obviously I was familiar with Canby and have spent a good bit of time either in Canby or passing through. But the more we got familiar with this great city over the last year or so, the more we became interested in becoming residents here. And we started looking at opportunities to, perhaps buy a house in a newer development or something like that. Well, then here comes this opportunity for this city administrator position, and it fit perfectly with my experience in local government, especially in city leadership with three cities prior to this city, and kind of went through that process, and here I am. So it all lined up well, and I'm on board in the office working for about the last month now, and then as I said, we continue to look for making the transition on the home side of things. We're in the process of working on some things, and we'll be moving to Canby in fairly short order. So
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, we are so happy to have you, happy to have somebody back in that city administrator seat. And I just want to say, to your credit and for the benefit of our listeners, Scott has just dived in to his work here in Canby. Even before he was officially on board, he was one of the little heads watching the city council meetings. You know, I saw those that name on the Zoom at times, and just really wanting to get acquainted so he was up to speed as quickly as possible when he did have to start making decisions and really jump into that role officially. And I appreciate seeing that. It really showed eagerness, and that it wasn't just, you know, looking for a paycheck or just looking for a job, but that you really wanted to do this work. And I appreciate that. I'd love to hear a little more, Scott, about the recreation side of your work, which, as you mentioned, you were the head of North Clackamas Park and Recreation District for about 5 years. But even with Oregon City, I believe you were for some time in either managing or involved with their recreation side of things. And I'd love to hear, you know, I think someone who's never done that job, and maybe others as well, like, it just seems like it'd be really fun to, you know, be in charge of designing parks and doing fun activities for people. But I know seriously that there's a lot more that goes into it, where you're really obviously doing salaries and handling budgets, but, you know, designing things for equity and really digging into those kinds of issues where you're dealing with things of access or folks with special needs. I'd love to hear how you think your experience with parks and recreation for so long would serve you in this job, where we obviously manage parks but do a lot of other stuff as well.
That's a great question, and so you're correct. The majority of my supervisory experience and the things that I've been involved with on the local government side have been I would say primarily parks, recreation, libraries, and then just kind of generally what I might refer to as community services. So, you know, kind of any types of I guess front facing or public facing things that you know, really make a community more livable. And not to say that that's been exclusively my work. While I haven't managed everything that I do in the city administrator position here, I have worked directly with or alongside those that do manage that. So I've been I've been very close to all the things that a city does, whether that's streets and sewer and, you know, public works type of things, or police, or, you know, all the finance stuff and all the internal stuff, of course. So yes, very, very much I've been primarily I've worked on a lot of parks and recreation types of things. But the more that you become in a leadership capacity and you become an administrator, the things that you do in public administration are very transferable. So whether that's personnel or finance and budgeting or community development and planning types of things, it all applies. So I feel good about, you know, being able to apply all of my skill set to the city administrator role here. But in terms of, you know, kind of some of the other parts of your question, I think the great thing about parks and recreation and what that can provide is it's one of those things that is sometimes people think of it as kind of the maybe it's not an essential thing, maybe it's just kind of a fun, you know, thing, whether that's a, you know, some ball fields or some trails or a playground or whatever the case may be. But when you think about kind of the fabric of a community and everything that you need, from public safety to, you know, planning to all the infrastructure and public works and all of that, think of a community that would be devoid of having parks and trails and recreation and library. You know, I would put libraries in that as well, that these are things that sometimes get thought of as kind of secondary things in a city or a community, but they, you've got all the other aspects of a community. And then if you don't have the parks and recreation and libraries and programs and activities, you really don't have a complete community, and your quality of life isn't as high. So that's what really drew me initially to the recreation and the parks world. And kind of as I grew up in that, again, then I got, more involved at the administrative level. And then at some point it becomes, whether you're administering one type of service or another, as a city administrator, you kind of just take those things and you apply it to equally to all things. So while I am kind of from the parks and recreation background, I have to be certain that I continually remind everybody that I'm not just focused on parks and recreation.
Right.
It is very important. And I think Canby has a lot of good things going in that direction. And we've got a lot of great opportunities, but I certainly have a more of a comprehensive scope on all of the city services as well. So
right.
I'll leave everything else out.
Right. And you're not going to take that parks lens and sort of apply it to everyone, make our police officers start wearing track suits and things like that. They have to jog to every call. great. Well, one thing that I also think, and you alluded to it several times, but that was a big asset for you in this job, we had two other finalists for the position, both of them also very experienced and qualified, but from outside of the state. You were the only local candidate. The other two were from, most recently, Maryland and then Texas. And you, as head of the NCPRD, obviously had already a lot of the relationships with county commissioners, NCPRD, Oregon City, a lot of the folks in this area that you will still need to lean on in partnership and in meetings and in regional projects and things as city administrator of Canby. Would you agree with that? And can you explain that importance a little bit more for folks who may not necessarily realize how important that is to your job?
Yeah, that's a great point. So yes, I think that is one of the things that probably I brought to this position that perhaps other candidates that were not from this area didn't bring in, not to take anything away from, there were a number of I think really highly qualified candidates, yeah. But perhaps that was one of the things that, the council honed in on me was that because I've worked in Clackamas County and around this area and in other, actually other parts of the state even, I have developed a lot of great connections and partnerships with agencies and people in the region, as you kind of already named a few of them, but yeah, be that people within Clackamas County, other city leaders, and we work closely with a lot of our fellow cities in the county or in this yeah. in the bigger region.
Metro.
Metro, I've developed a lot of relationships there at the state. You think of all the transportation issues and various planning things and so just a lot of that. So I think what people might or might not understand, Canby is we are our own governmental unit. We're a city corporation. And we operate as such with our mayor and council as our board of directors. But we are part of other things that we connect to that in order to make Canby successful, we have to work with other agencies, other partners. We've got to connect with our other cities that are nearby and in the region so that we can kind of plan together as we all move and grow and all the different things. And then think about things like funding. There are certain things that come through, whether it's from federal funding or from the state, or perhaps it gets passed through the county. We have to be connected to those things in order to get our piece of that pie, And so that's why that stuff is important, and it just helps us. It just helps the city. It's good in the long run for the city that we've got established partnerships. We know who to talk to, and not to suggest that, I'm the only one that has those, our mayor and council and
yeah.
other department heads that are already here have a lot of those types of longstanding relationships as well that are very helpful. So I think I can just bring, a bit more of that layering of those types of partnerships. And
yeah,
I had kind of a head start, if you will. And
right. Yeah. It lowers that learning curve a little bit that you already had that in your cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's always a fun balancing act, trying to manage that more regional perspective with the, what's best for Canby type perspective. But I would love to hear, I don't know if you think about your job this way, but do you have, either certain goals that you would love to see happen, in your work? I know you've, again, just been there a month or so, but and still getting your feet under you. But either goals or just sort of opportunities that you've seen and really feel like this is something that, that I can make happen for the city of Canby in this job.
Yeah, well, and I do need to qualify the answer with that. Yes, I'm very early in the process, and I've still got a lot to learn. Again,
yeah.
I had a little bit of a head start with being nearby and being able to get up to speed with things. But yeah, first and foremost, the job of the city administrator is to work very closely with the mayor and the council, and help determine the goals and the priorities for the city, and then. I then in turn take those and to the best of my ability with the resources that are available, I work with our staff, our department directors, our managers, our leadership team, and work that into the organization and try to carry out those goals. So kind of first and foremost, my goals are the mayor and council's goals. And there's, sure. Processes that we go through to kind of refresh and determine what those goals are. And hopefully we'll be doing that again after the first of the year here. So secondly is, there's all the kind of big picture projects and planning and different fun things to think about. But, the foundation of everything as the city is we deliver a tremendous amount of just day-to-day services. So
sure.
delivery of high quality public services for the city of Canby residents and for businesses and for stakeholders is critical. So yeah. I think that kind of slides into the background a little bit. You think of like, what are the city initiatives? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, we're out taking care of all the things that we have, whether that's streets or utilities, infrastructure. We're delivering. We have an excellent police department. Taking care of our public safety. We work closely with our partners at the fire district. We work with the school district all of the day-to-day, and not to leave anything out, but we've got we are a comprehensive full service city for a city of our size. It is really impressive how much we deliver. We have everything from your typical, public works and police and planning and libraries and parks and all that. And we also have our own transit system, which is really amazing. So delivery of just of day-to-day really good services is high on my list, and it's important to me. And then, we can start talking about things like the projects that are in front of us that, we're looking at the downtown project of the Quiet Zone and there's an arch and Quiet Zone project that's kind of front and center. We're looking forward to the Walnut Street connection, which is the 99 to the industrial area future connection.
Yeah.
We've got the Ivy Street improvement project coming up next year. That's going to be a major redo of Ivy Industrial Park and, lots of economic development kind of things and just looking forward to those type of things. And then, we've talked about the park stuff. There are a number of, well, first of all, we have a really interested and active Park and Recreation Advisory Committee. That's
yeah.
our committee. And they have been excited for a long time to move some projects forward. So we're looking at how we prioritize what gets to move forward and with what funds that are available and how we do that. So we'll be looking at some of those types of things. I just sat in a meeting last night where we were talking about the extension of the Malala Forest Road, mm-hmm. kind of, on the south side of Canby. And so,
yeah.
I could go on and on about a number of those types of things, but, I think that's kind of it. And then I think I would also, it's very important. It's become apparent to me very early and very often that one of the things that I need to keep front and center as I do my job is maintaining Canby's livability. So Canby we are a great small city. We are positioned really nicely in the region that we're in, where we're kind of near enough to Portland and the Portland economy for that type of stuff, but far enough away that we have good separation, which gives us good livability. We have all, said we have a full city, we're a full service city. So we have everything that you need, if you live here. But the challenge is to maintain that livability and that small town charm and small town character with the growth that is inevitably going to happen. It's really, you can't stop growth, but what you can do is work with it to try to have good, smart growth that continues to maintain the livability, while providing kind of the forward movement that is probably going to happen at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, livability is so important. I love that you mentioned that day-to-day stuff as well, because it does fly under the radar, but it is so important. I mean, we this is all before your time, but we've seen, knockdown, drag out fights about fireworks at high school football games and where the splash pad is going to go, which park is it going to go into? But that stuff only happens because the garbage is being picked up every week, right? Like 1 week that doesn't happen and nobody cares about the exactly. splash pad. So it is so important. It really is the foundation of everything that we do here. Canby, as you also mentioned, Scott, a very unique community for a small town. We have a very, I think, established identity for our size. We have our own transit system. We have our own utility provider. We have our own telecommunications and internet provider. We have a ferry. Like, no one has those anymore. What have you seen in your experience of working for and with a lot of other communities and a lot of other government entities that you feel are really unique and positive assets for Canby that we can build on for our future, especially as we're recovering from a lot of stuff in this next year, the economic fallout from the pandemic, a lot of impact to our unique locally owned small businesses and just trying to bounce back from all of that stuff. Mm.
Well, and it's a continuous balancing act, and there's always going to be the challenge of how to grow and where what types of things are going to happen when and where and all that. But the uniqueness of Canby, I think, again, I already talked about this, but I think it's worth repeating is I think differently than a lot of the cities in this region that we're in, the numerous small cities around the Portland region, and even beyond, in kind of going south, we really genuinely have this feeling of the small town kind of Americana thing, and I think a lot [S2] Yeah. [S1] Of that is owed to good planning and the good work of all the leaders before, mayor, council, other leaders here, of just trying to be thoughtful about that. But again, there's that kind of continuous outward pressure coming at us from, people. Well, Canby becomes desirable to people, and then people want to move here. So then there's that pressure to grow and to add [S2] Yeah. [S1] More housing and so on and so forth. Yeah. You mentioned some of the unique things, that you're right, having the Canby Ferry, that is just so cool. I think the fact that we're a city with city services, but we are on the urban rural boundary. And so just outside the city limits, we have beautiful agricultural farmland and lots of open space. And we're surrounded on three sides by rivers. And we've got just, there's incredible natural beauty around, but then within the city, it's and a lot of it just is, it's just the people. I think there are just lots of longtime people that have lived here that care a lot about the community and continue to do so and have invested in this community. I'm at City Hall looking out my window right now as I talk to you and kind of looking at our downtown. And we have this really charming downtown that has some great things going, and probably more to come, right? And I think maintaining the character of our downtown with the growth that's going to happen with that, but if you can have a main street kind of a downtown focal point in a small town like this that's thriving, which we do, and we hope to continue that and perhaps even move that forward more, That just adds so much charm and character. Not every town has the real true identity of a downtown core or a main street kind of a thing. And then we even have, you know, right next to downtown, we have Waite Park with the gazebo. That's just kind of the classic, town park. And so it's just, there's just so much going for us here. And we've got to try to retain those things while the new stuff comes in.
Yeah. Well, after the year that we've just mostly been through with 2020, I'm not going to ask you to predict anything that might happen next year. But I do think that most of the indicators do indicate, suggest that we're going to be passing through, that we've got vaccines seem to be on the way. The outlook is a lot more positive for next year. And a lot of people are hoping for that bounce back to kind of happen. I'm curious, again, not a plan per se, because we don't exactly know what's going to happen, but do you have a certain posture or approach for kind of how you would manage and sort of lead through this challenging, but with some good opportunities and a more positive outlook in 2021, I'm not sure exactly where you were during the last recession that we had, but in the earlier 2000s, if that might that experience might serve you a little bit as we look to, and again, there are a lot of players. It's not just falling to Scott Archer and what he does for how the city of Canby recovers, but what are just a few of your thoughts of kind of how we're going to manage our way through this next year?
Yeah, well, to kind of hit to the latter part of your question first, I was in Oregon City when we had the big downturn in 07, 08 ish.
Yeah.
Our city then, and I was involved in a leadership position with the city, we went through some trials and tribulations and challenges, and we had to do some pretty significant things. And I definitely have garnered some experiences from that I think will help translate. Should we, not to suggest that we're heading for something that drastic. And I think, my take is that I am cautiously optimistic that we're gonna climb out of this thing. And you said it, Tyler, the vaccination is on the way. We're holding the line right now. I know small businesses are struggling, and hopefully they can continue to hold until we can just get over the hump here and into the downhill part of this thing. What I would say as far as Canby goes is that there's something. We've got some really good things going for us. We already have a good a decent economic base in town, and we're going to continue to work on economic development opportunities that will grow our tax base. But what Canby has going for it is Canby has been very responsible with its money, at least in recent history and probably historically going backwards.
Yeah.
So we are in, and I say this carefully, but we're in relatively good shape. We're on reasonable financial footing. There's always the opportunity that the possibility things could change, but we as a city, credit to the mayor and council and others that Canby has been, I guess I would say, we've already run the city in a pretty lean manner. Yeah. So We've not overextended ourselves greatly on adding a bunch of new staff in times that are good and then having to pull back those staff in times that are bad. We run this is credit to the great staff of the city. We people work really hard for the city. We have a dedicated city staff team that do a lot with limited numbers of people and limited resources. So the city has been, I think, intentionally financially cautious. And that is in boom times, then that means you're running pretty lean when perhaps you could expand, and spend more money. But in more, when the recession or when the financial meter turns backwards a little bit, that means then that you're not having to dial your services back because you've already run them lean. So I think we just take the good financial footing that we're on right now, and we just build on that, and we continue to move forward. So again, credit to those that have been with the city prior to me for good financial management of the city, and I think that gets us out of this in a positive way. We'll see where things go. That the qualifier to that is you never quite know what's going to happen with things, but I think we've got. I think we've got good things on the horizon.
Cool. All right. Well, we are almost out of time here, Scott. Thank you so much for sharing so much good information about your own background and your hopes and dreams for the city of Canby. Really good information about where things are at with our community. I'd love to end with just I hate to put you on the spot, but maybe a little more of a fun question. Is there anything about you, sort of a fun fact or something surprising that maybe a lot of folks may not know, an achievement that you have, you climbed Mount Everest or something like that? Anything that you could share?
Oh boy. I'm just relieved. I thought you were going to ask when you said you were going to do something a little different. I thought you were going to ask me to like sing or dance or something.
So that's next. That's next. Okay. That's coming up.
We'll do that next time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do a lot of activities, and my family's been really active, and we like to just kind of get out and explore and do different things. So, I haven't climbed Mount Everest or something like that. But honestly, the thing for me, and this isn't something that is that earth shattering, but I really am family focused. My wife and I have been married for 30 years, so my wife Tam have three just great kids that are 28, 26, and 22. And I think our crowning achievement is just having raised three great human beings that are all kind of making their way in the world, and they're all doing great things. And it's just my family is what's so important, and lots of things that we do and that we continue to do. And you probably see some of the Oregon duck stuff.
I do.
My office is decorated with duck stuff. We like to, participate in, going to the football games down at Autzen and all that kind of stuff. But it's just my family, I think, is the thing that I hang my hat on. And I give most of that credit to my wife, Tammy. She's the superstar of my family. So that's kind of what I'm about.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Who needs Mount Everest, right?
Maybe I'll do that in a few years. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Once we get past this pandemic stuff. All right, Scott. Well, thank you again. Unless there's anything else that you'd like to share with folks, any thing that they should pay attention to or sign up for, or anything at all that you want to share before you go.
Well, I think it's good for people to stay engaged with their community. Keep pay attention to what's going on with the city, with different, planning efforts and, big things that are coming down the pipeline. We're going to have the redo of 99 through town in a couple of years, and that's going to be a big deal, and, doing other substantial projects. So, I would encourage people to stay engaged and in tune with their community. There are always volunteer opportunities, whether that's on city boards and committees or nonprofits or with the school district or whatever. And I think getting engaged in your community is important. And I just look forward to continuing to get to know the people and the places in this community more over the coming years. So appreciate the opportunity, Tyler.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Scott. We look forward to working with you in the future. And just thank you so much for giving us so much time today in your busy schedule. Take care. Happy holidays.
Thanks. You too. Happy holidays. Thanks, Tyler.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, we're going to wrap this episode up with another rendition of Can Be Then. This time, it's brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily, you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. Over the years, the Christmas holiday season has held a special place in the hearts of many a Canby resident. Celebrations of the annual winter holiday date back to Canby's earliest days. In 1873, just 3 years after the town was given the name Canby, the Oregonian recorded a rendition of the Willamette's Ball, an annual soiree that was held here. Many responded to invitations extended, and the comfortable room was, as usual, crowded. The newspaper reported of the event. It is needless to say that affairs were conducted in excellent style, and the music was very fine. All spent a pleasant evening, that may be safely said. Of course, Christmas holds special significance to the Christian faith community, which has long represented a sizable portion of Canby's citizenry. In the early days, many German-speaking Christians called Canby home, and Canby Evangelical Church of North America had many such worshipers. For years, the group met and worshiped in the homes of fellow members, but in 1894, they built their first church, which still stands today at 339 South Township Road. The church was dedicated on Christmas Eve of that year under the direction of its first pastor, Reverend Hermann Schuchnecht. German was the spoken language of the church until 1912. In 1907, tragedy struck a prominent local family during the holiday season as well-known Canby citizen James Fegley went missing under mysterious circumstances. On December 17th, Fegley, an agent of the Russellville Nursery Company, drove from Canby to Butteville, St. Paul, and finally Woodburn on business, staying overnight in Shampooey. The following day, he was expected to return home to Canby, but he did not. In fact, he was never heard from again. His disappearance 10 days ago has aroused much speculation as to his probable fate, the Oregonian reported on December 28th, 1907. And it is feared that he has met with foul play. Mr. Fegley drove a black horse with a white stripe on the forehead and had a top buggy, newspapers noted. The only theory that seems plausible is that one, that Mr. Fegley was held up a few miles from Shampooey before it was quite light, murdered, and his body placed in bushes along the road and his conveyance driven away. Fegley's son Grant was a prominent businessman and later a politician in Portland who managed Columbia Woolen Mills. After receiving the distressing news of his father's disappearance on Christmas Day, he spent 3 days scouring the boggy underbrush on both sides of the 12-mile road between Canby and Shampooey, to no avail. Mr. Fegley was 62 years of age and resided with his daughter, Mrs. John Reideman, at Canby, the Oregonian said. He was in usual cheerful spirits, and the idea that he is a suicide is not entertained by his family. The authorities throughout the valley have been requested to look out for the supposed murderers with the stolen horse and buggy. Throughout the 20th century, the Christmas tree industry began to take root in Oregon, and Canby farms were part of the early boom. In 1918, the city's farms harvested an estimated 40,000 firs and distributed them all around the world. In 1924, a snowstorm dumped several inches of white powder on Canby just in time for Christmas. And though the youngsters enjoyed the chance to build snowmen and indulge in other frivolities, the storm caused the city no small amount of trouble. With 3 or 4 inches of snow and slush covering the ground here and no lights or water, Canby was in a plight as a result of the storm, which started at 7:30 this morning, the Oregonian said. Snow fell most of the day. Electric lights and telephone wires were damaged. The water supply ran out early tonight. Several accidents were reported on the highway during the day. 3 years later, an airmail plane piloted by N.B. Evans was wrecked near the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby shortly before Christmas. Don't worry, there's no evidence to suggest the plane struck an airborne sleigh pulled by 8 tiny reindeer. Instead, the pilot reported that his engine had gone dead as soon as he passed over Canby at an altitude of about 1,200 feet. Evans initially attempted to land on the fairgrounds' fine racetrack, but he couldn't make an approach due to the electrical wires. After landing in a nearby field, the pilot, who was uninjured, began promptly disassembling the aircraft so it could be transported back to Portland for service. Only the landing gear and the left wing were damaged in the unplanned landing. Scandal rattled through Canby in 1929 as a series of disgraceful episodes were reported on the city's streets on December 25th. It is alleged that one young man of Canby was found in a drunken sleep early Christmas morning and was taken home by a friend in a car, the Canby Herald reported the following day. Other young men, or boys, are said to have been drunk on the street Tuesday evening, but no arrests were made. Gambling was also allegedly witnessed on the Christian holiday, a vice that had been the scourge of many upstanding citizens that winter, according to the Herald. Much indignation has been aroused as a result of the alleged outrages uncovered Christmas Eve, the newspaper reported. And Knight Officer Bowsbly, who is looked to for the preservation of peace and dignity, was the subject of more or less censure. According to the paper, several prominent citizens had gathered at the post office on the day after Christmas to demand something to be done. Unless adequate means of protection against such infringement upon the peace and dignity of the community is given, it was pointed out, there will be justification in enlisting the aid of the state authorities to clean up the town, the Herald said. From what can be learned by current reports, there seems to be no doubt that some of these requests are justified. The week of Christmas in 1988, 6 migrant families from Mexico facing eviction from a Canby church found themselves in new warm surroundings and on the receiving end of food, toys, and clothing donated by community residents. The families, consisting of 43 people, had moved into the Iglesia del Dios Vivo on Juniper Street earlier that month after their work teams had completed and they had nowhere else to go. But the presence of that many people in the aging building represented a safety concern, and the city had informed them they would have to find new lodgings. Enter the Canby Grove Christian Conference Center, which put up all 43 souls in comfortable cabins on their property. Other generous Canbyites flooded the center with donations after hearing about the migrants' plight. When the bus showed up to transport the workers and their meager belongings to their new temporary living quarters, the families began singing religious songs, the Oregonian reported. Many parents held hands with their sleepy children and carried babies in their arms. Finally, one last tale from Canby's Christmas history. In 2001, library patron Felicia Sheeran checked out a video that contained an animated version of the poem "Twas the Night Before Christmas," along with several other holiday cartoons from the 1950s. She also checked out a book containing the same classic Yuletide poem. Both media contained depictions of Santa smoking a pipe and drinking a cup of holiday cheer. Sheeran returned the book and movie with notes saying the materials were inappropriate for her 6-year-old daughter and 3-year-old son and demanding that they be removed from the library. So, on December 17th, just in time for Christmas, the library board issued its ruling. The materials would not be removed from the children's section. Policy held that censorship is a purely individual matter and that the library does not act in the place of parents with regards to materials that children select. Library Director Beth Saul sent a letter to Sheeran notifying her of the board's decision and thanking her for her interest and involvement. And that, friends, will do it for this episode of Now Hear This Canby. I'm James Walton. As always, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.
The holiday season is a wonderful time of year, but it can also be stressful, and 2020 is certainly no exception. If you're feeling a little overloaded, let the Wild Hair Saloon take family meal planning off your plate. Whether the current status allows in-person dining, the masters of takeout have you covered. Ask about their family meal deal carryout special, a double portion of chicken fettuccine alfredo, a huge Caesar salad, big enough to share, but if you don't, we won't blame you. Garlic toast and two kids' meals with cookies for only $25. Plus, their mouth-watering prime rib dinners are available Friday and Saturday nights. Open Monday through Friday, 11 to 8 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 3 to 8. Visit thewildhairsaloon.net or call to order 503-651-4273.
Now Hear This, Cambie is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Cambie by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Cambie is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Cambie's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.